What is BNIC2? Well, it's the perfect segue between our BizNews conferences in March. It's also intimate. It's also, as you can see, there's a limited number of seats. And it's also the time where we actually get to just see each other again and have a bit of geselligheid. And we're trying to ensure that this year you find that it becomes that way. We're indebted to Magnus for opening for us today. Many of you know him for his strong opinions and as a vocal advocate for offshore investing, but you might not know that he began his career in a building in Haight Street in New Doornfontein, directly below me, one floor. He was at Die Transvaaler, and ek was by The Citizen. I was like a 20-year-old whippersnapper, and I don't think you were much older than that, but we had dinner last night, as you do when you're good friends, and we used to spend quite a bit of time at a place called Vegkop, which was the pub at the New Doornfontein Hotel. You can imagine what salubrious starts we had to our careers. Here's another story you've probably never heard. When he started Brenthurst Wealth, he decided to name it Brenthurst. And soon after that, he got a cease and desist order from the Oppenheimer family, who had a rather well-known estate of the same name. Magnus, though, had done his homework, as he always does, and he'd already trademarked the name, politely sent the registration documents back to the lawyers, and, well, never heard from them again, did you? Oh. It's with that same foresight and maverick spirit that he's guided his clients for decades. Magnus is truly a self-made business person. He has swum against the tide. He has said it as he sees it, and he has been a very good friend to BizNews, to myself, and to thousands of clients who are thanking him today for doing what nobody else thought was the right thing. Please give a warm welcome to a man who truly knows the value of a good name, Magnus Haystack.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, a multi-award-winning, truly independent boutique wealth manager. Invest better with Brenthurst.
Of course, you know that Alex threw me under the bus 2 days ago. I was supposed to be the last or the second last speaker tomorrow afternoon. And I thought, let me sit back and hear what all these clever guys have to say, and then I'll adjust my talk. And then Alec phoned me 2 days ago. He said, listen, we have a problem with our opening speaker, and you've got to do the opening speaker. Oh, my goodness. So I started doing my research and graphs and charts, and 27 slides later, last night he tells me, oh, it's a no-slide presentation. So, then I looked at the program, and I saw, well, David Roode's going to tell us about the economy, you know, again, as he does every morning. And Piet van Heerden is going to tell us how cheap the JSE is. And Sean Pesch is going to tell us about how cheap Europe is, etc. And we've got a host of other speakers who are experts on the field. And I really thought to myself, what can I be telling you this morning that can add value to your lives? And then it struck me, Alec and I have lived through as journalists, and then later we went into different paths and merged again in the investment world. We've seen it all happen in the investment world in many ways. So the title of my talk today is, You've Never Had It So Good. Have you ever thought I'd say a speech like that? Well, first of all, if you go back in time when you wanted to open up a stockbroker's account with a stockbroker, you would phone the broker, you'll open an account, and then if you wanted to buy some shares, you will phone the stockbroker if he isn't at lunch yet, and you will place an order for 100 De Beers or something. And then that afternoon, he says to you, he's put the order in, and maybe that day, maybe tomorrow, he'll phone you back. yes, we've got you 100 de beers. And then he will send his messengers from the office down to the trading floor. We still have the open outcry system. They will then buy the shares and exchange script, and it'll go up again. And then like 5 days later, he will phone you and say, you have to pay now. That's how it worked. And sometimes they lose the script, you know, like the master's office does every day with your files. And you used to arbitrage for this long period of time. Plus your brokerage was 3%, and everything was communicated by fax, and they posted your statements. At the same time, you know, the investment world in South Africa was dominated by the life insurance companies that were selling you toxic products, 10-year endowments, 30-year endowments. I mean, you were paying 5% fees, and they would do back-to-back structures, and any profit that you made as an investor was totally incidental. So that has changed, ladies and gentlemen. Technology has changed the way that you and I invest to the better. Today, at the speed of light, you can buy and sell shares, not only here, you can buy it offshore. The price has come down to, in some cases, 0.2, 0.3, 0.4%. You can buy anywhere in the world, and that is empowering people tremendously. So you've never had it so good in terms of the costing, the range of funds, the choice of instruments. You have shares, ETFs. You have so many funds to speak of. So there is like a banquet of investments that can make you extremely wealthy over time if you're informed, well-disciplined, and you do the right thing. So from a technological point of view, you've never had it so good, ladies and gentlemen. The second part of the lucky part is the following. Now, if you go back in time, you remember some of the old toppies here, like me. We had some equal exchange control in South Africa. And from 1960, I think, with Sharpeville, it was heavily imposed. You could not take money out of the country. You would go to jail if they catch you. And people came up with all kinds of schemes how to externalize money. Krugerrands in their girlfriends' bras and paintings. And people would buy horses in Ireland and bring them back here and then slaughter the horses because they were actually donkeys, but they wanted the pricing differential. I can tell you so many stories, ladies and gentlemen, if Alec gives me another 20 minutes, but I'm not going to. Now, the one thing, and you're also going to be surprised hearing it from me, the one thing, I mean, I know that the agency is dysfunctional and they have no idea what they're doing, but the one thing they did right, in my opinion, they started relaxing exchange controls in 1997. First of all, I think it was 100,000, then 200, and it was 400 for a while. And local investors started nibbling on the offshore thing. But at that point in time, the stock market in Johannesburg, or the South African or Johannesburg Stock Exchange, was doing exceptionally well. From 2001 to 2008, the JSE was probably, Peter, help me, one of the best performing stock markets in the world. Driven by a stronger rand, we joined the World Trade Organization. China was buying up everything we can produce. Our balance of trade was just going through the roof, etc. So there was actually no real reason to start thinking, because you was just making so much money. At the same time, the Wall Street was in a bit of a funk for a long period of time. Things started changing 2010, 2011. And one of the reasons I started recommending offshore investing, I came back from an investment seminar and I had a long chat with John Malden. You might know or read about John Malden. He and I wouldn't say we became friends, but we had a couple of dinners together. And he started convincing me to look at technology and biotechnology and robotics and all those kind of things in the United States. I started looking for my clients for a technology fund. And there was only one. Stanlib had a little technology fund. And they actually, as I was starting to put money into the fund, they told me, we're closing it down. There's no interest in technology funds in South Africa. That's how bad it was. So they closed it, and I had to go outside, and I went to Fidelity and Templeton, and I said, guys, have you got, I'm looking for these type of funds. And they actually opened it up for us. as we started externalizing some of our funds for our clients in the early days. But the big change, ladies and gentlemen, came 1st of April 2015. Happens to be my birthday, but it's got nothing to do with this story. In the budget of 2025, out of the blue, without any prior speculation, the government increased the offshore allowance from 400,000 to a million, single discretionary allowance, and 10 million if you apply through the channels with tax clearance, etc. And that was right at the time when the Guptas and the state capture and the Zuma years were starting to have an impact on our confidence in the country. And that was like floodgates had been opened. And since 2015, Mike Sushler, the late Mike Sushler, also died of cancer at the beginning of last year. He worked out for me, it was about 1.4 trillion rand has legally gone offshore into other waters. I would think the number is bigger today. Now, the local investment industry tried to protect their business, and they had this campaign of local is lacquer and JSC is cheap, etc. I'm not going to be talking about that bit. But the clients that we are dealing with, high net worth clients, saw the opportunity to take money offshore. And for very good reason, the Wall Street was running, NASDAQ was running, there was serious money to be made. But the most important thing from my perspective, from a perspective of a South African, was the freedom that that allowance has created for South African investors, families, etc. What I mean by that, I've had many clients telling me, thank you for taking my money offshore. It has enabled me to have the confidence that I have a large nest egg offshore. And not only in our company, quite recently, the Crutham survey came out, it was previously called IntelliDex, where they go and ask all the high net worth wealth managers, where are you placing your funds? And they interviewed about 160 companies. And the number that came back was, on average, 64% of the assets are abroad or in offshore-linked type of investment instruments. So the clients, the individual clients, each one in their own little hole, they decided they feel better that their money is offshore in an offshore fund, and the returns had been better for a very long time, especially in technology funds. The Magnificent Sevens were running like you could not believe it, and substantial wealth has been created. But the most important thing, and I never thought about it that way until I looked at it from a different perspective, the freedom to move substantial money per year based on your tax clearances has not forced, but it was the cause that a lot of people chose not to immigrate from South Africa. They actually said, I don't need to immigrate anymore because my money is offshore, my lifestyle is here, and that's been a perfect combination. So many of my clients thank me today. The bulk of the assets are invested all over the world, from America down to Japan, but their lifestyle is here. And if I really gave them very good advice, they could afford to live at Hermanus. But, that has happened. So indirectly, the decision by the ANC to allow people to take money offshore, which was very surprising at the time, and there was always kind of rumors that they did it for the ANC guys to move their money offshore with the Gupta monies. We will never know. We can never prove it. But today, offshore investing, onshore investing, it's all settled down. There's no more debate. You don't get accused of being unpatriotic if you recommend offshore investing. And the proof is in the pudding. As we've seen with Alex's portfolio, the amount of wealth that you created with your offshore portfolio relative to what some of our monsters, our big, large funds in South Africa, how badly they've underperformed. The difference in returns, the difference in wealth today is astounding. So that debate has totally died. In the early days when I still had a column in Report, I wrote and I suggested that people should take their money offshore. Well, my column was pulled because they said it's unpatriotic. It was disloyal to the country. I was called a poor smuss. That's how bad the instinctive reaction was to someone saying, I think Mr. Van der Merwe mistake some of his money invested offshore. Fortunately, that those days are dying and people are accepted as totally being normal. And the fruits are to be seen for many people. Now, so that's why I'm saying it's, you've never had it so good. You can, if you're well informed and you're disciplined and you seek knowledge, which you get from platforms like BizNews, you can create over a period of time, whether it's 5, 10, or 15, 20 years, substantial wealth for yourself out of the borders of South Africa. And you can choose the best fund manager. You can choose the best instrument. And it gives you so much power and control. And the upside is that you can finance or fund your lifestyle in South Africa for you and your children. However, the downside is now the following. The advisory business, of which I've been involved for about 25 years, maybe even 30 years now, has grown and become so complex. I remember when I started, there was something like 30 unit trusts to choose from, and it was really a case of eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Okay, I'll pick that one. That was the extent of financial advice, ladies and gentlemen. Today, if you haven't skilled up and you now have to, let me take one step back. So money has been externalized, but remember, it's still on your balance sheet. It's still being taxed. It's still part of your estate when you die. Your children still would like to inherit some of that money. Now there's an added layer of complexity that a lot of people are now starting to experience. What about probate? What about if I die and Yanni is in London and Sonny is in Melbourne? It creates all kinds of problems in terms of winding up of estates, distribution of capital, added to the comment I made earlier that the master's office is in disarray. So in a company like ours, and I'm sure most other companies had to do the same, they had to upskill the levels of skill in terms of global taxation, global estate planning. And it's become so complex, and a lot of people are not realizing how complex it's become, and they need to address that. So do you keep the money in your name? Do you keep the money in joint names? In certain jurisdictions like Guernsey, you can have four people on an investment. That sounds fantastic in theory. In practice, what happens if one of those people die? Now you have a problem. So we've evolved in our company to the extent that we have a trust company in Mauritius, and we are strongly advising people to, once they take the money offshore, go straight into the trust day one. If you do the calculations in terms of the estate duty that you will save over a period of time, it is fairly substantial. It's quite a big number. And that kind of completes the picture from investing, financial planning, externalizing assets, drawing up wills, putting it in your trust. And I'm quite sure, Rob, that you'd be glad to hear they even accept bitcoins in trust in Mauritius. Okay. So there we have it, ladies and gentlemen. You have had it so good. There's no reason for you not to create good wealth for yourself and your family over time. It's all there. It's your application. And that's what business does. And, you know, Alec has done such a great, and I think we should applaud Alec for what he's trying to do to educate and empower people. It's the biggest empowerment thing you can do is to make someone financially independent. I'm running out of time. I want to end up with a T-shirt I saw many, many years ago. A T-shirt said, "Life is a race. He who dies with the most money wins." Good luck, ladies and gentlemen.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, a multi-award-winning, truly independent boutique wealth manager. Invest better with Brenthurst.